Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Mario Ritter, and Anne Ball. Later, Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Venezuela's opposition leaders called for more street protests Monday. The call for action came after more than 7 million Venezuelans voted in an unofficial referendum at more than 2,000 locations on Sunday. During the opposition-organized referendum, 98% of voters rejected President Nicolas Maduro's proposal to rewrite the nation's constitution. The referendum included three questions. One dealt with Maduro's proposal to create a new legislative body to rewrite the 1999 constitution. Voters overwhelmingly rejected the proposal, according to academics who monitored the vote. In response to another question, voters urged the military to defend the current constitution. They also pledged to support new elections before Maduro's term ends in early 2019. The referendum was seen as symbolic because it was not part of an official government election. Maduro dismissed the voting as unconstitutional. He said it would have no effect on the government or his political proposals. Maduro has set a July 30th vote to create the Constituent Assembly. The legislative body would have the power to rewrite the Constitution and dissolve state institutions. The opposition has accused Maduro of seeking to build up the proposed new assembly with his supporters. They say this would allow him to remove the few remaining checks on his power and create a Cuba-style system controlled by his socialist party. Julio Borges is president of the opposition-controlled National Assembly. He said the large voter turnout should be seen as a message to the government that democracy is not negotiated. "We don't want a fraudulent constituent assembly imposed on us," Borges said. "We don't want to be Cuba. We don't want to be a country without freedom." On Monday, Venezuelan opposition leaders called on supporters to increase street protests as another way to show opposition to Maduro's planned July 30th election. Political observers said Sunday's large turnout was an important show of support for the country's opposition. But they also noted that the number of voters fell short of the opposition's 7.7 million showing in the 2015 legislative elections. It was also less than the 7.5 million votes Maduro got when he was elected in 2013. Opposition leaders said the lower number was the result of having to organize the balloting quickly and at limited locations. Some experts said the referendum result would likely cause the international community to take a stronger position against Maduro's planned vote. One woman was killed at an opposition voting site at a church in western Caracas that was surrounded by government supporters. Witnesses said hundreds of people became trapped in the church. 4 people were wounded. Violence during opposition protests over the past few months has left at least 93 people dead and 1,500 injured. I'm Brian Lynn.
South Korea's government proposed on Monday to hold military talks with North Korea to reduce tensions between the two countries. The South Korean Defense Ministry offered to hold a meeting Friday at the truce village of Panmunjom. The village sits along the border between the two sides. South Korea's vice defense minister said the talks would seek to stop all hostile actions which heighten military tensions at the border. The meeting would be the first between Korean officials since December 2015. North Korea has not yet answered the proposal. In another development, the South Korean Red Cross has proposed to hold a meeting with North Korean officials on August 1st. It also offered to hold the meeting at Panmunjom. The purpose of that meeting would be to discuss restarting reunions for families separated by the Korean War. An estimated 60,000 South Koreans have sought to take part in the exchanges. North Korea has called for the return of 12 North Korean female restaurant workers who fled to South Korea last year before family reunions can begin again. South Korea, however, says the workers fled of their own free will. Efforts to restart military talks and family meetings follow South Korean President Moon Jae-in's attempts to develop a two-track policy. South Korea's Unification Ministry says the latest proposals are consistent with Moon's policy. There is no change in our position that we will put forth effort to persuade North Korea to come out for denuclearization by using all possible measures such as sanctions and talks, South Korea's unification minister said. Moon has supported a policy of engagement with the North Korean government. He is seeking to open talks with the North Korean government while supporting U.S.-led restrictions on North Korea. The U.S. and United Nations Security Council have placed sanctions on the North for its long-range missile tests and nuclear weapons program. North Korea's most recent missile test took place on July 4th. Experts have said the missile could reach the U.S. state of Alaska. Daniel Pinkston is a North Korea expert with Troy University in Seoul. He said South Korea may be willing to take steps like suspending loudspeaker broadcasts across the border, which North Korea opposes. Once that is established, then both sides can understand what the other is seeking. They can signal to the other side what they want, what problems or issues they have with the other side, Pinkston said. I'm Mario Ritter.
Kim Jong-un became North Korea's leader in late 2011, after the death of his father, Kim Jong-il. Many wondered what the young Swiss-educated leader would do for the poor, isolated country with nuclear weapons. Almost 6 years later, there are still unanswered questions. But the world has learned some things about Kim. Kim Jong-un has actually improved North Korea's economy under his rule. Unlike the father, he seems uninterested in negotiations on its nuclear program. And the world has cause for concern about the latest test firing of an intercontinental ballistic missile. His father, who ruled North Korea from 1994 to 2011, also ordered a series of weapons tests. But the elder Kim was willing to discuss weapons for food exchanges. No such talks have happened under Kim Jong-un. He has overseen three of the North's five atomic test explosions and both of its successful satellite launches. Experts view the launches as a test of long-range missile technology. On July 4th, North Korea launched an ICBM that could reach the American state of Alaska. Kim celebrated the successful missile test as a gift to the United States on its Independence Day holiday. Kim said that North Korea will not give up its weapons until the U.S. stops its hostile policy against the North. Kim is believed to be 33 years old. As ruler of North Korea, he has not met any foreign leaders or traveled abroad. The best-known foreigner he has met, former NBA player Dennis Rodman. The North Korean leader may have believed that the U.S. and its allies will not attack his country directly. Experts fear many people in South Korea will be killed if the North chose to retaliate. The capital city of Seoul, with its 10 million residents, is within the range of North Korea's artillery along the border. Kim may also have believed that China, North Korea's neighbor and ally, does not want a weakened North Korea along its border. Last February, North Korean agents removed a possible rival for power in North Korea. The agents killed Kim Jong-nam, the leader's half-brother, when he was in Malaysia. North Korea's economic growth in recent years has also allowed Kim to focus on his nuclear program. His father, by comparison, had to negotiate with other countries for food after a famine in the mid-1990s that killed tens of thousands. Kim has seen what happened to Libya's Muammar Gaddafi and Iraq's Saddam Hussein after they gave up their nuclear weapons programs. Chung Sung-cheong is an analyst at South Korea's Sejong Institute. He said Kim doesn't want to resolve issues through diplomacy. He's just trying to protect himself by reinforcing his country's military power. Kim likely thinks his nuclear bombs will prevent the U.S. from entering a conflict on the Korean Peninsula. If North Korea demonstrates its ability to strike Washington and New York and threatens to turn them into a sea of fire, the U.S. couldn't easily enter a war, Cheong said. It will take more time for North Korea to master the technology for a working ICBM. Once that is accomplished, Kim could push for talks to end UN sanctions against North Korea. In the event of such talks, Kim is not likely to give up his country's nuclear weapons. He cannot give up nukes because they are the core of his power, said Cho Han Bom, an analyst at South Korea's Korea Institute for National Unification. The North Korean ICBM could be capable of reaching Alaska. But experts say the North still needs to master several more technologies before the missile will work perfectly. When that happens, the U.S. might reconsider military strikes, Cho said. Aside from a U.S. attack, China could suspend or reduce its oil shipments to the North. China sends about 500,000 tons of crude oil to North Korea every year. That is nearly 90% of the North's oil supply, according to Cho Bong-hyun of Seoul's IBK Economic Research Institute. If China ends its oil shipments, the North's military cannot fly its warplanes or operate its tanks. That will not help Kim to stay in power, Cheong predicts. We can see he's so far run North Korea in a smarter way than his father, Cheong said. But there is a high possibility that his adventurous, uncompromising attitude will eventually make things turn out badly. I'm Ann Ball.
This is What's Trending Today. Many people watched the first program in the seventh season of Game of Thrones Sunday night. This was the beginning of the second-to-last season for the award-winning television series. The series is the creation of American cable and satellite television network HBO, or Home Box Office. Game of Thrones is available mainly in the United States and other English-speaking countries, such as Australia and Britain. About 8 million people watched the last episode of Season 6, which came out last June. Add in people who watched the show on a computer or electronic device, and the total was over 20 million. With that many people watching, it is no surprise that Game of Thrones was a hot subject Monday morning. In the U.S. alone, over 5 million people searched Google for keywords related to the show. Game of Thrones was also the top entertainment subject on Facebook. Game of Thrones is based on a series of books by George R.R. Martin. The book series is known as A Song of Ice and Fire. The first book, called A Game of Thrones came out in 1996. The first episode of the television show came out in 2011. To date, 61 episodes have been released. The show's actors have become famous and appeared in movies. Some of the best-known actors are Peter Dinklage, Lena Headey, Kit Harington, and Emilia Clarke. So, what did people think of Sunday night's episode? Entertainment Weekly called it terrific. The magazine wrote that almost every important character made an appearance and set the stage for an epic endgame in Westeros. Westeros is the make-believe continent within which much of the action takes place. Many people reacted to the appearance of a fairly new character, Euron Greyjoy. He is the new king of the Iron Islands. He wants to make an alliance with Cersei Lannister, played by Headey. Greyjoy is played by Danish actor Pilu Asbæk. Lots of people reacted on social media to his leather clothing. They said he looked like a rock music star or somebody about to go out dancing. Fans of the TV series enjoyed connecting with their favorite characters after more than a year. In addition, many fans reacted to the appearance by British singer Ed Sheeran. He was singing at a campfire. Most people thought it was funny to see the singer on the show. The online magazine Slate publishes a report on each week's Game of Thrones episode. It is called This Week's Worst Person in Westeros. This week, the magazine nominated Sheeran for the honor. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. A mind filled with fear and bad thoughts is an unquiet mind. When you are worried, it can be hard to direct your attention on even a minor problem. For some people, this can interfere with work, sleep, and other activities. In others, it could lead to a serious mental disorder. People who suffer from anxiety, a nervous disorder, have unreasonable thoughts and fears about the future. Often they are unable to control these thoughts. They are also less able to deal with stress. Two recent studies found that doing mindful meditation exercises can reduce signs of stress in people suffering from anxiety and make them more productive. The studies also showed that mindful meditation can lower a person's stress levels. Meditation is a simple, low-cost way to help calm an unquiet brain. We can define mindful meditation as thinking quietly about what is going on in the present. You don't think about the past or the future. You think only about your own breathing and what you sense around you. Should you start thinking about a future task or a past mistake, you simply tell your mind to stop and return to the here and now. Another part of mindful meditation is to let yourself experience any thoughts and feelings without judgment. Around the world, the number of people reporting stress and anxiety is increasing. The World Health Organization says that between 1990 and 2013, the number of people suffering from depression and/or anxiety rose by nearly 50%. The WHO's website says this increased the number from 416 million to 615 million people. This is not just a health issue, but also an economic one. WHO experts estimate that depression and anxiety disorders cost the world economy $1 trillion U.S. dollars each year. Stressed and anxious workers who can't stay focused are not productive. In one recent study, Canadian researchers wanted to see how well anxious, stressed people completed an activity. The researchers found that meditating for 10 minutes a day may help keep people's minds from becoming unfocused. So mindful meditation may help people stay on task. Mengran Xu is a clinical psychologist at the University of Waterloo in Ontario. He and his colleagues studied with people who showed signs of anxiety.
We know that anxious people in general, if you ask them to stay on task, it's hard for them. They tend to wonder, they tend to worry. But those people who practice mindfulness, they didn't. They were able to stay on task.
In this study, 82 people suffering from anxiety were asked to perform a computer task that required high levels of focus. Then researchers interrupted them as they performed the work. The researchers studied their ability to stay focused. Then the 82 people were divided into two groups. One group listened to an audiobook. The other group did mindful meditation for about 10 minutes. Finally, researchers asked all the subjects to go back to their computers. Xu says that those who meditated performed much better on the task.
The anxious people who listened to the audiobook, they performed much worse over time. While the anxious people who practice mindfulness meditation, they were able to, in a way, improve and maintain their performance on the task.
The researchers published their findings in the journal Consciousness and Cognition. The other study is from the Georgetown University Medical Center in Washington, D.C. For this study, researchers looked at 89 patients who have an anxiety disorder. The researchers divided the patients into two groups. One group took a mindfulness meditation training program for 8 weeks. The other group, the control group, took a class on stress management education for 8 weeks. People from both groups were asked to do something stressful. They had to give a short speech in front of a crowd, not once, but twice, both before and after their training. During each speech, researchers measured levels of hormones and proteins that the body releases when a person is feeling stressed. The control group, researchers said, showed small increases in stress on the second speech compared to the first. This suggests their stress and anxiety levels increased when they had to give the speech again. However, when making the second speech, those who used mindful meditation produced fewer stress hormones and proteins. This suggests that meditation worked to reduce stress. Elizabeth A. Hoagie is a doctor and works in the Medical Center's Department of Psychiatry. She says people who used mindful meditation had sharply reduced stress hormone levels and other biological responses to a stressful situation. And those who took the stress management training had poor responses. Hoagie and her colleagues reported their findings in the journal Psychiatry Research. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.